Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. One of my favorite people out there who just had a very big, high profile situation. I'll have him tell you about, if you don't know already, happened to him. He's a amazing human being who has really been standing all this time for truth and actual facts, and a big proponent of individual liberty. And I am honored to welcome Steve Baker back to the show. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Mel, thank you for having me back.
Wow. So I've been watching you. I watched from a distance what was going on. Most of my audience is familiar with you, but just we'll get into it first. What happened? You have been one of the people that has covered January 6th the most fairly. You weren't there as a Trump supporter. You were there as a journalist also to look at what was going on. You are very open about being a libertarian. So you just want things to be fair and real and true and transparent. And that's why you went to January 6th. And then you were reporting on it. You were one of the people that got access to the video. You found a lot of anomalies on the video, especially in the testimony by a couple of the cops that we've all seen. We talked about on the show before. And you also became a target. And since last you were on the show, you actually have been arrested and charged. So let's just catch the audience up on your case, and then we'll get into more details on everything else.
Yeah, it's very simple. As you know, from our past discussions, my threats from the Department of Justice began over 2.5 years ago. I was told in November of 2021 that I would be, quote unquote, charged within the week. And that was on November 17th. And that was the week before Thanksgiving, back, you know, 2.5 years ago. And then we didn't hear from them again for 20 months. They just disappeared. I think we scared them off a little bit because we did a media offensive at the time that was nowhere nearly as big as what we've been able to generate here now that I work for the Blaze. Right. But nevertheless, I think that the assistant U.S. attorney that had my case at the time, she just basically said, you know, forget this crap. She took my file and put it at the bottom of her pile or something. That's all we can surmise. Right. Because we didn't hear from them. And of course, we've never gotten an explanation of why they backed off. So 20 months later, I got a grand jury subpoena for my videos. The horrifying part about that was, is that grand juries are not seated to look at misdemeanor offenses. They are only looking for felonies. So somebody asked the grand jury to investigate me and consider felony charges. The only thing we can surmise, because once again, grand jury's hearings are secret, is that they couldn't talk the grand jury into doing that, even though in D.C., as it's well known and often said, a grand jury in D.C. can indict a ham sandwich. Well, I guess they couldn't bite into that sandwich for whatever reason. And so we didn't hear from them again until 4 months later, when in December, the week and a half before Christmas, they said, okay, this is the big one. He is going to be indicted, and he's going to have to self-surrender the next week, which would have been the week before Christmas. And then everything blew up on them. I mean, just my own tweet alone about that was seen by 4.5 million people in the next 24 hours. So all of a sudden we heard from the FBI yet again. They said, okay, well, we're not going to do this till sometime after Christmas. So they retrenched. And then it wasn't until the week before March 1st that we heard back from them, and they said, okay, he is going to now have to self-surrender. At that time, I was working in Dallas, not here where I'm at right now, my home in North Carolina or D.C. I could have presented myself basically anywhere in the country, and because I was working at the Blaze headquarters at the time, we decided to do it there in Dallas. Yeah. And so that's where I self-presented, self-surrendered, as they said. They didn't raid me at 6:30 in the morning like they've done so many other misdemeanor defendants.
Right.
So we got an email from the U.S. attorney who said that he wanted me to present myself to the FBI at the FBI field office in Dallas wearing, and I quote, a T-shirt, shorts, and flip-flops, which I did not do. I wore suit and tie. And that's how I showed up. And then I walked up and shook the two FBI agents' hands, handed my shoelaces, my belt, my tie, and my jacket to my attorneys, and then walked in, was presented or was patted down, did the fingerprinting, and then they put me in cuffs and perp walked me to their car, where they drove me to the federal courthouse in downtown Dallas and handed me over to the U.S. Marshals, who then proceeded to put me in leg chains and then into a cell with a meth dealer. So that's how I spent the next 5 hours, was in and out of that cell. And then they marched me in leg chains before the U.S. magistrate there to read my charges.
And what were your charges?
It's the four basic misdemeanors that most of the January 6th low-level defendants are charged with. The first one, of course, is the glorified trespassing charge, entering and remaining in a restricted space. And then the second and third charges were kind of redundant. They're claiming that I used abusive language, which, of course, is also completely absurd. That did not happen at all to anyone at any time, any place, anywhere. And then the next thing that they charged me with was the same parading and picketing charge, right, which once again is a nonsense charge, because I was wearing no Trump paraphernalia, no political gear of any kind, no political messaging. I wasn't carrying a flag or a picket. No. And of course, through the blaze, we released the entire 37 minutes of me being in the Capitol, because we harvested that video from Capitol CCTV along with excerpts of my own video, proving and showing that, in fact, I behaved myself while I was inside the Capitol. And so, but that's what Mel, that's what they do. They overcharge you. They do it to everyone, not just J6 cases. This is the Department of Justice modus operandi. They overcharge everybody, hopefully to scare them into a quick and easy plea deal, which we expect to come pretty soon. We haven't seen one or have been offered one yet, but we expect it. In fact, my arraignment was last week. It was a Zoom hearing last Wednesday, and the judge even asked the prosecutors if they had offered me a plea deal yet, and of course they haven't. And so, the goal is to get me out of their hair as quickly as possible, but I don't think we're going to do that.
Right, because something happened in between that where you were one of the only journalists given access to the video, and you went in and viewed the video and you found anomalies with the stories that two of the cops had been telling. Tell the audience just a little bit about that so that they understand, because when you did that, that's when I started to think, how are they going to act like this isn't part of? But they had been signaling that they were going to come after you. But after that, it kind of seemed to escalate. But you did find anomalies. So can you just tell my audience about when you looked at the videos and what you exposed out there? We'll put links to your stories, too.
Yes, I've had and been blessed with extraordinary access to the Capitol CCTV videos. In fact, I'm going to be back in there looking at them again next week. Wow. Even though the speaker and the committee is still rolling out, thousands of hours of video, and they're uploading it to Rumble. And there is, more access today to the general public than there has been at this point. There's still quite a large treasure of those who they've just not had time. It's a very, very arduous task until somebody understands the software there and how tedious it is to pull that and then to get it uploaded to a public server. It's a long, long process. And they've hired extra staff to do it. They're continuing to do it. But there's still areas of the Capitol. If you'll remember, when Speaker Johnson said that they were only going to upload about 95% of that video, right, that's because there's still, there's areas marked sensitive inside the Capitol. And in fact, where we found our first big story about Special Agent David Lazarus and Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn, right, we found the videos that were in the highly sensitive areas of the Capitol down in the tunnels. But those videos were important because that video proved that Special Agent David Lazarus, on the dignitary protection detail of then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, actually perjured himself in the first Oath Keepers trial. Had we not had access to that video, and nobody would have ever seen that, nobody would have ever known that.
Right, right. And that is one of many things that have come out since this story broke, since you started covering it a long time ago. We found out Darren Beatty's done great work on the whole pipe bomber story. Obviously, Julie Kelly's been on the whole thing. You've been on it from the whole start. So much of that story is still falling apart, yet they're still arresting people. Mm-hmm. And it's quite disturbing. Also, because that one charge, I guess the 1512 charge is even being questioned by the Supreme Court, if that's even a real charge. But a lot of people have already gone to jail that were charged right. and convicted with that. So we're in a place where they are clearly stretching this out as long as they can, obviously, to keep the story going that a bunch of domestic terrorists tried to do an insurrection to overthrow the government. Now, as you've said before, because you went there, first of all, like I said, you went there as an observer. You weren't going there because Trump told you to go there. You were going there as a journalist. And that day, you've been one of the people that have said there were people there. There was violence, clearly. I mean, how many FBI agents or CIA or whoever was in there? But that wasn't the majority of people. But still, I mean, there is a sweeping thing, like all the people are victims of persecution. And you've always said from the start, no, there were people that actually did commit crimes, just not all the people that they're arresting.
Yeah. And it's something that I was even doing cleanup work on today, just on X this morning. There are people who are still claiming that Capitol Police started the violence, that they drew first blood. And that's just absolutely factually incorrect. There was an outer barricade on the west side that was clearly marked on every single section of that, what they call bike rack barricade. It right. was marked closed area, big letters, red letters on a sign right. hanging on each one of those sections of fence. And there was a half a dozen police officers standing there against 500 to 1,000 people that were ready to push that thing over, which of course they would not have been able to stop them unless they were willing to draw their guns and start shooting people, which they of course did not do. They were restrained in that regard, but people did, in fact, people in that crowd, agents provocateur, whoever they were with, doesn't right. matter. Doesn't matter if they were MAGA, doesn't matter if they're Antifa, doesn't matter if they're feds, it doesn't matter who they are. They were the first ones to perpetrate violence that day. Right. And they pushed over barricades, they pushed over cops, and then they proceeded up to a second line, which was a semi-permanent black section of fencing on the Lower West Terrace. More Capitol Police gathered there because now the radios are going off and calling available units to come and assist them on the west side. And so there were more cops there at this point. And then the crowd was growing in size. They pushed over that fence. And then the cops retreated back up to another level. And then they started bringing out more bike rack. And it wasn't until that insurging crowd and whoever those violent provocateurs were started pushing on that fence that they started releasing the less than lethal weapons on the crowd. Right. So that narrative that the Capitol Police started it is absolutely incorrect. Now, we also have evidence, not only evidence from Metropolitan Police body cams, but we also have now, and something I'm going to be probably releasing later this week, is we now have documents where actual cops have testified themselves to the FBI that they believe that, in fact, they hyped up the crowd and further inflamed the violence themselves by their own reaction.
Wow. Now, we do need that information because there's also been a bunch of cops that have come out and tried to speak out, and they've been, it seems to me, silent, censored. But then the cops that apparently were obviously Dunn and Lazarus, but other ones have not only been cheered on as heroes, but also I believe one of them is running for office, and you know, they both got book deals, and it's just very interesting to watch some of the cops. I mean, Sund and some other people, other cops came out and said, like, no, we're going to tell the true story the way that we saw it, and those cops are being treated, it seems to me, are either censored or just silenced. Are you finding that as well?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the cop that's running for Congress in Maryland is, in fact, officer, former officer Harry Dunn, who we've already done a series of stories on, and we have much more coming on him yet to tell. We've harvested from Capitol CCTV what I call a day in the life of Harry Dunn, or I like to refer to as Dirty Harry. Yeah. And as a result of that, we're going to show that the guy just can't tell the truth. He didn't tell the truth. Anything he said to Congress, anything he said in trial under sworn testimony in both of those cases, yeah, or anything he said in his book. His book is just a pack of lies. And we're going to be able to show all of that from the video that we've already harvested. So this is all coming.
Yeah, it's all very important that it does come out, because the one thing I do want to talk to you about, to me, you're a, you know, there's lots of people out there that are libertarians and they say they're libertarians. I love Ron Paul, and you are an actual libertarian who actually, you told me about that you score people. You don't care if they're left or right or libertarian or whatever, but you have a liberty score, and that's how you judge who you're going to vote for or who is, you know, actually for the people, following, you know, a path of freedom and liberty. And so let's talk a little bit about the fact that you actually are a person that values and espouses liberty in terms of what you're dealing with. Because I look at the entire January 6th, all the way up to arresting you, putting you in leg irons, perp walking you, all of this. And I think that this is an affront to liberty above all else. So how are you feeling as somebody who's dedicated your life to being kind of a staunch advocate for individual liberty and personal sovereignty going through this?
Well, I mean, first of all, I was humiliated by the process.
Yeah.
Now, I was not put through nearly the aggressive treatment that the Department of Justice and FBI have put other individuals through. I mean, other individuals charged with the same four nonviolent misdemeanors, including other independent journalists who were charged with only the four nonviolent misdemeanors, have been SWAT raided by as many as 15, 20 or more agents at a 6:30 a.m. raid, where they show up with guns and rifles drawn, automatic weapons drawn, with the red dots painting not only themselves, but their wives and their children in those morning raids. That has happened to far too many people. And the first thing, Mel, that anyone needs to understand, and I say this over and over and over again, so, you know, somebody that's watching or listening to this right now is going to hear me say it again, and I apologize. No, I don't apologize for the redundancy, because it needs to be said again. This is something that the FBI never did before January 6th. The FBI did not SWAT raid. In fact, they didn't investigate misdemeanor offenses. That was not their charter. That's not their job. Talk to any FBI agent, former, retired, or current, and they will tell you that when they joined the agency, they were told that their job was not to go after the minnows, but go after the whales. In other words, the big crimes. And that was their charter, and that's what they were supposed to be doing. But all of that changed with January 6th. And that's why some of the guys like Kyle Serafin, yeah, Steve Friend, these guys couldn't do that. They, you know, Garrett O'Boyle, they could not continue doing that. And not in good conscience, not in keeping with their oath. And so they became whistleblowers, and look how they've been treated as a result of that. And so this has to be pointed out. And the other agents who think that they are good guys and they're just keeping their head down for a couple more years till they earn their pension, they need to be called out. Because if enough of them would step forward and say the same thing that Kyle and Steve, Garrett and others have said, then maybe they could make that change. And then maybe DOJ, maybe the leadership of FBI would have to be required to answer for this unconstitutional action that they're pulling on people. And as I said, in my case, and I don't want to beat this horse to death, you know, especially, yes, I was humiliated. All right.
That was the goal. That's why they do what they do.
Yeah, I was humiliated to be put in leg chains for a nonviolent misdemeanor. This is something that is not supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. But as I sat there in a cage with a meth dealer for hours that day, all I could do in all honesty, Mel, was trying to put, and I was literally trying to put myself in the place of some of these men and women who have been held in that cage for weeks, months, years already. And I'm thankful that I didn't face that. But, you know, I don't know anything else to do except take this blessing that I have of the large platform that I now have and the attention and the spotlight that has been shown on my case and try to reflect that as best I can, as often as I can, and as loudly as I can on those more abusive cases and try to bring attention and try to get the American people to wake up and understand what's happening here. And this is the thing about being a libertarian. Basically, another way of saying it is I'm a classical liberal. Okay. That's my mindset. I'm one of those people that would have probably at any other time in history joined not only a, you know, civil rights march, but also stood with those who were being, you know, abused and unfairly treated by our criminal justice system. And in most honest liberals that I know today, and including some that are mainstream media journalists, they admit to me in private conversations as colleagues when I'm there in D.C., right, they think that there's much of what's going on here is over the top and they've gone too far. These sentencings are too much. Now, having said that, the grassroots on the left, they think that I need to be waterboarded.
I know. The humanity of the hatred and the vitriol and the pile on. And I understand because I do follow the money on the left. A lot of this are organized campaigns of attacks and, mm-hmm. and you know, that, but even with you of all people, but I've seen this with many of the defendants, some of them terribly treated, some of them went to jail for years, but whenever they post, there's so many people like you, you know, basically egging them on, being terribly cruel, being very mean and abusive. And the problem is, I don't understand. I mean, these people don't seem to understand the slippery slope of January 6th and how people were treated. We just had this week, a woman that is pro-Palestinian, I guess, mm-hmm. works with CARE a little, have the FBI at her door over Facebook posts. So right, for me, right. It's the slippery slope of, yeah, well, today it's them and the MAGA, which you're not. And a lot, I know two other people who were there, honestly, as journalists that also had similar situations. But I have to tell you that what is also going on is the DHS. I think a lot of this goes back to what I think is the most unconstitutional thing that ever happened in this country, which is the Patriot Act. And after the Patriot Act, they established this intelligence blob that seems to have no oversight, no one above them. That's the DHS, TSA, DNI, that seem to have worked under Obama and Holder. They put in the DOJ, Department of National Security, and they seem to have all worked together with the FBI to create a new class of terrorists, of enemies that they say, right. You know, they can just say, well, this person's a threat to national security, or this person is a domestic terrorist without really any evidence of that being true or intent or anything, which is what I think is going on here. So this surveillance state that is also being exposed, you know, Bank of America, and I think Verizon and other public-private partners and big tech were handing over information on January 6th people to the government without even probable cause or warrants. So what do you make of that as a libertarian and as somebody that looks at that not being the government should not be doing that at all. And yet here we are with them doing it often without a warrant.
We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkayshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now.
Well, that's exactly what FISA, you know, 702 is all about, is the unconstitutional allowance of our security organizations, our intelligence organizations, to surveil and log and capture the private communications of every American citizen without a warrant. Right. We would, and including every single liberal that I know, would be, I mean, they would just be incensed if these agencies kicked in their doors and came in and started rifling through their files and taking their computers and seizing their devices and taking it with them. They would all be screaming bloody murder. But that's what they don't understand, is they don't have to do that anymore. They can do it electronically. They can do it in the darkness. They can do it in ways that does not violate your front door. You don't get to capture them on your Ring camera, and you never know that they were inside of your phone or inside of your computer or your iPad. And so that's what's happening. And of course, it was all, you know, look, when somebody says something, whenever they label a bill or an act as something like the Patriot Act, yeah, or the Save the Cute Seals Act, right, you know, you, yeah, have to dig in and see what's behind the cover letter, the cover page, and see what they're embedding, what they're burying in those 500, 800, 2000 page bills, because that's where the enemy is. And when they say the enemy is within, that's the enemy is within those bills. The enemy was deeply buried in the Patriot Act, but they covered it with that at a time when we were all rah, 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 you know, right, being attacked by Islamicists and, you know, Muslim terrorists. And right, so everybody said, okay, yeah, yeah, we'll go along with that. Patriot Act? Heck yeah. I'm a patriot. I'll go along with that. Right. And of course, there were a few people back then. Most of them were libertarians.
Yeah.
Saying, no, 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 no. Read the bill. Read the bill. It's dangerous. And now we know how dangerous it is. And when it comes to January 6th specifically, the worst and most egregious offense that the Department of Justice is making against, and not just the Department of Justice, but the judiciary itself,
right,
is two different. These are two different branches of government here,
yeah,
that they're making, is they are, in fact, attacking our First Amendment rights more than anything else. First Amendment abuse is happening in every single January 6th case. Now, look, if you grabbed a baseball bat and a shield and you started pounding on police, all right, that's one thing. Okay. Yeah. Nobody that I know, nobody that I associate has any sympathy whatsoever. Let me rephrase that. We do have some sympathies for some people because, as I like to say, I saw that day, I saw bad people doing bad things. I saw good people doing good things. And I saw otherwise good people doing stupid things because, right, they did get caught up in the mob mentality.
Right. Yes. Right.
Now, does that exonerate them? No, they made a personal choice in the moment to grab a baseball bat and attack cops or whatever their choice was.
Right.
Now, other people showed up with violent intent, and that's a different situation altogether. But in almost every case, though, is that you're sentencing. And again, I have gotten mainstream media journalists to admit this to me in private, is that in every single case, if you ran your mouth at all, even if it was just simply chanting USA, USA, USA,
right,
or singing the national anthem as you were walking through the building, or waving your flag, that's an act of speech, picketing, parading, whatever, that your sentencing was typically more severe as a result of that than any other act you took, even if it was nonviolent. And this is whether it was the grandma, you know, that's been just recently convicted, yeah, by a jury for four misdemeanors, or if it was Stuart Rhodes,
right,
who was sentenced to 18 years. Now, was he sentenced to 18 years for violence? No. Was he sentenced to 18 years for weapons charges? Nope. Wasn't even charged with weapons charges. Was he sentenced to 18 years for storming the Capitol? Nope. He didn't go inside. He was sentenced to 18 years because of the words that he spoke. But you know which words he never spoke? He never ordered any oath keeper to go inside the building. He never ordered any oath keeper to overthrow the certification of the election. He never ordered any oath keeper to attack Congress members or to kidnap Congress members or to hang Mike Pence or anything of that sort. It was words he said in the months preceding that the jury in D.C. doesn't agree with and doesn't like. And it was the words that he said in the weeks following that a D.C. jury didn't like and wouldn't agree with. And for that, for those scary words, he got 18 years.
Yeah, Enrique Torrio wasn't even there. It wasn't even in D.C. And I think he got even more than that.
22 years.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, and they got charged with sedition. And mm-hmm. it's just so outlandish to me. But also another thing that came out of it I wanted to mention and get your take on, too, is after it, on July 26, 2021, Reuters put out an article saying that Facebook, Google, Facebook Meta, Google Alphabet, X, Microsoft, Apple, all these people joined the Global Internet Forum to Counter Terrorism database based on what happened because of to crack down on white supremacists and far right militias, mostly associated with the Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, and other people involved in January 6th. So they also took January 6th to take the surveillance state to a next level. And this includes the UN in this uptick. So that's now international.
Oh, exactly. No, that's exactly right.
So, but
it's not even just the Oath Keepers or the Proud Boys, Stuart Rhodes or Enrico Torrio. It's not just those examples that are being used as examples to increase the police and federal surveillance state.
Right.
That's not just that. It's the grandmother. It's me. Yeah. It's every one of them, because all of us are being labeled internally in their documents as domestic terrorists. They may not be able to say that in trial because I didn't get charged with terrorism. I'm not being charged with insurrection. I'm not being charged with sedition. But because I walked through with a camera and I documented the events that was going on that day, like 60 other journalists who went through those broken windows and open doors did that day, who haven't been charged, because I did it, and because I don't report my stories to the proper media sources, therefore I'm not one of, you know, I don't have the get out of jail free card
from NBC or Reuters or one of their own. Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, or the fifth guy through the window was with New York Times or anybody like that.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
These are not the people that are being charged. But the point being is that this is, in fact, the example that's being used because they can drive up the numbers. And, you know, like, for instance, as Steve Friend eloquently explained in his book, this was a single event. All right. And it is being spread out then to all 57 field offices. So as individual cases, they can then claim in all of their speechifying that Christopher Wray does or Merrick Garland does, is that white domestic terrorism is on the rise and has spiked because of one event.
Right. So they're calling. So in essence, they're calling every single case an individual event, basically, to make it look like there's a white supremacist militia, anti-government movement that is the most dangerous threat in America, is what they've been saying the whole time. So that's what they're doing, is they're counting them each as a separate incident.
That's correct. And guess what they did not do in the summer of 2020? Guess what they did not do on January 20th of 2017 during those riots after Trump was inaugurated? They didn't do that, but they're doing it in this event so they can jack up those numbers and then make those claims. You know, and I could go on and on and on and on.
About we talked a little bit about this is a problem. Why I think the Patriot Act needs to be absolutely repealed and the entire fourth branch of government dismantled, though it would be very hard to do that. I even look back to Snowden and the NSA, because when I'm looking at some of the things that they've escalated after January 6th, this is like the Patriot Act was written before 9/11. It was tried many times after 9/11. They put it through as the Patriot Act. But some of these things that they've implemented, so there's part of the implementation that in that one Reuters article about Facebook and YouTube and Google going into this counterterrorism thing is that that's a UN inner working group with the Five Eyes nations that is based on what happened on January 6th. Then you have another with the Patriot Act. They don't define terrorists in there. It could be any form of terrorism. And then also what I've been looking up, because they're about to renew, just for us to know that they're doing it. They want to renew the warrantless 702. I think it's on April 19th coming up. I tell everyone to call their senators and demand that that not be allowed anymore, this warrantless surveillance. But they also seem to have elevated their ability to work with, if they can't do it and surveil us. If you read what it's saying about what's happened with the NSA, especially in terms of the foreign EU and the Five Eyes, that they can get their counterpart in another country to surveil people here if it violates that. So they're out there saying, well, we have to renew the warrantless 702, but they have ways to get you searched anyway.
Right. No, it is. I mean, look, I try not to over spiritualize anything, even though I have my religious beliefs. I'm not a very religious person in that regard. But what we're seeing here right now is it. I mean, it just feels like it's the culmination of a 2,000-year-old prophecy that we're entering into at hyperspeed right now. And it frightens me, as I told somebody else a couple of days ago in another interview. I have never, until COVID, until the government's reaction response to COVID, and then more importantly until America's reaction to the lockdowns and the mandates happened, and I saw how quickly and how easily they were able to secure the Americans' complicity at not going to work, at keeping their kids home, at wearing the mask, to yielding to an untested experimental medical product, all the above. I was pretty optimistic about our future, or about our ability at least to hold it back, and that these things would never happen in my lifetime. Now it's just accelerating at breakneck pace right now, because I think that they saw the blood in the water. That, it's like chumming sharks at that point. Yeah. And that's exactly what they have done here. And that's why everything is moving so fast. And it's why they're getting by with what they're getting by with, even on these January 6th cases. Yeah. But as I said earlier, I have prayed over and over and over again over the months, let this cup pass from me. But if it obviously is not going to pass from me, and if I have to go through this, then I'm going to take it to them. Yeah. And Mel, I can't win. I know.
A friend of mine, mm-hmm. Peter Navarro, is in jail right now for keeping what he believed was his oath and loyalty to his boss, and not testifying to the Pelosi January 6th committee that he felt was fraudulent or setting him up. But he's in jail right now, 74-year-old man with not even a traffic ticket in his whole life. And they doubled and tripled down. John Roberts himself wouldn't let him stay out on appeal. I mean, and again, now also we have the Lawfare team, which I've traced back. A lot of the people that are persecuting, whether it's Mark Elias going around the country with crew, fighting every election case and turning people that question the election, taking their law licenses for questioning the election, to the Lawfare on steroids against Donald Trump, all four cases, you can go through them. You're going to find the same. It's like that we have a fifth column of this elitist lawyers on. I don't know if they're on the left, they're globalists, they're funded, a lot of them through Brookings and other places. But what they're doing to the legal system in general, and watching it specifically in the January 6th cases, but also in the Trump Trump persecution cases, particularly the documents case, which I really dug into a lot. And I'm not really sure what that's about, but it's not what they're saying. And they're not even showing evidence. Trump wasn't allowed to put on a defense in two of the cases. We saw Alex Jones not be able to put on a defense. Mm-hmm. The damage they're doing to the legal system and trying to do this by any means necessary. What do you make of that and the long term damage of that? It's always been very, you know, had problems, but now it's in our faces that it's selective, it's punitive, it's persecution, not prosecution, and it's political.
Yeah, well, you made the connection there, whether you meant to or not, between, for instance, what they're doing in the Trump case, what they're doing in the January 6th case. The first and most important connection is that it is all Trump related. You see, what the left is doing right now to January 6th defendants is not liberal. It's right. The opposite of liberal. Right. They are using lawfare against those they perceive to have been MAGA. All right.
Exactly.
Will anybody listen to me ever and understand that I have never been MAGA? I wasn't MAGA that day.
I know.
I'm not MAGA now. Now, will I vote for Trump? Hell yes. I'm going to, for obvious reasons. And if you don't understand the obvious reason, you're just stupid.
I agree.
Okay. Yeah. But having said that, the most important thing that Peter Navarro said before he self-presented and surrendered to go into prison, just before he did, in fact, the last thing he said in that press conference was he looked at the press and he said, fact check this. And then he pointed at the prison facility behind him. He said, there's not another misdemeanor defendant in that prison. I will be the only one. And that's the message that they're sending. If you get a parking violation and you're MAGA, you're a terrorist parker. If you are a misdemeanor picketer and parader, and all you did was walk through the Capitol and take a couple of selfies for 10 minutes, and then you walk out and left, you are a misdemeanor terrorist.
Right.
I get called a terrorist every single day on social media, and I always, and I respond. I don't respond to all the, I mean, God, if I responded to all the junk that I got from both sides, by the way,
I know,
but if I responded to everything, I wouldn't have time to do anything else, but I will respond to that accusation every single time. And I always say, can you please define for me what misdemeanor terrorism is? Is this a new legal concept? And you know, Mel, not one single time has anybody ever responded. This is, in fact, the biggest case of, you know, TDS that there ever was, Trump derangement syndrome. Now, I always say, because I do come from a different position, that TDS happens on both sides. It's a I call it a double.
I agree. I agree with that 100%. Yeah.
I call it a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
But the point being is that you nailed the intersection a while ago when you said that about the similarities between the lawfare against Trump and his attorneys and in his trials and the lawfare against January Sixers and in those trials. And it all boils down to not leftism, not liberalism. It's not even Marxism, although it ultimately kind of displays itself in that way, because a lot of these trials are Stalinist in how they're presented. Yep. Like you said, they don't allow you to actually present your case. They deny you the right to present your case.
It's unbelievable.
And so what it is it's TDS. It is this derangement syndrome they have about Trump. And that's what's driving all of this. That's what makes a lifelong liberal want to see people get 5, 10, 20 lifetime sentences for walking through the Capitol, whereas they think and they have their entire life, they have believed that anything for a violent felon, January 6th related, non-Trump related, shouldn't, you know, that they'll show you the studies that any more than a 2-year prison sentence is non-effective, which I personally, as a classical liberal, that's pretty much true.
Yeah, But I also was looking into this and I saw, even I was looking through because of the election stuff, I was looking through like even the Zuckerberg Chan Foundation and their Tech and Civic Life, they have they've put hundreds of millions of dollars into reforming the justice system and the prison system, as many Arnold Ventures, like a lot of these NGOs that are run by left wing or globalist billionaire class that happen to be on the left, a lot of the NGOs that they have, they're very like Black Lives Matter. They're all against that. Some our justice system is biased. There's systematic racism. Prison sentences are too long. The prosecution is it's persecution. I mean, we've heard this for decades, but when it comes to January 6th, it's all fine. By the same people that have been yelling about defund the police and no bail, no jail and all of that. But when it comes to January 6th, it's fine. It's such a dichotomy, but the truth is too, Steve, is what we are dealing with on a larger scale is what I call a creeping totalitarianism, like the CFR or Rockefeller would talk about, like a super class of people. I call it the parent company running America. It's a public-private partnership. I think they've usurped most of the power of elected officials all the way to the top, but these people don't seem to realize that the pendulum could swing. And it'll be them, for whatever reason, just like we saw this week with the meme about Israel and the FBI showing up at the house. And the FBI agent actually says, we do this all the time. So mm-hmm. Why don't people fully understand? It's like that old, I think it was from Elie Wiesel talking about, well, first they came for this person, then they came for this person, then they came for me, and there was no one to stop them. So it's kind of like, it's so bizarre to me. And that's why I think a lot of the pile on to you and every January 6th defendant online is a coordinated effort to demoralize and dehumanize and all of that. But you know, the pendulum does always swing, especially even in Mao's China. After, you know, the revolution happened, his staunchest supporters were put to death, a lot of them. So, you know, that's the weird thing that's happening, is that people don't realize that this is a threat to them, too.
Well, this is the part that I keep saying again. This is another one of those repetitive, redundant statements that I'm going to continue making in as many interviews as I can possibly make, because as many people as can possibly hear this and process this and absorb this as possible need to hear what I'm about to say. And that is, and I'll speak straight to anybody from the left, anybody from the mainstream media who might review this or watch this interview or listen to this interview. And that is you're exactly right. First, they came for J.D. Rivera, who was contracted by a mainstream television station in Mobile, Alabama. And they SWAT raided him with over 20 agents with guns drawn on him and his family at 6:30 in the morning. And then they convicted him, did not allow him to present his case, and then put him in prison for 8 months, solitary confinement for the first 2 months of that. And then they came for Stephen Horn, a young 22-year-old at the time of January 6th, independent journalist, who all he ever wanted to be was a journalist, who had press badges and passes that he had acquired all the way back to when he was 16 years old, and a Trump-appointed judge would not allow him to show those badges to the jury. He wasn't allowed to present his case. Yeah. And then they came after Siaka Massaquah, who was a actor who was doing a comedy show with Daily Wire, Babylon Bee. And then he flew with his 7-month pregnant wife back to Hollywood or to LA after a premiere in Nashville with that. And they arrested him in an airport. Again, to humiliate him. For what? For 4 misdemeanors. And then they came for me. And then they did the same thing. And you know what none of these mainstream journalists are doing? They didn't speak up for JD. They didn't speak up for Stephen Horn. They didn't speak up for Siaka. They didn't speak up for me.
Nope.
And what's going to happen, and what they don't understand, is that they're going to eventually come for them. Not Trump. Oh, yeah, I saw MSNBC freak out yesterday or the day before when Kash Patel said that what he said about, you know, if he got to become the attorney general or whatever under a new Trump administration. Oh, yeah, I saw the freak out from them. But no, it's your side is going to come after you, because if you have read a history book at all, about what left-wing totalitarianism does, has always done in the history of the world, particularly in the last century, is the first thing they do is clean their own house. They clean out the factions of the factions, because either you agree with 100% of the dictates and the policies of the tyrant in charge that day, or you get eliminated. Right. You get sent to the gulag, or you get tied to a post and shot. That's what happens and will happen to you first.
Right.
When they get total power, which is what you want, by the way.
Right. Or what you're pushing for. And this history has proven that over and over and over. And unfortunately, you know, I even see people like Nicole Wallace, who was like stood up for the Iraq war, was, you know, speaking for Bush during rendition, and still now is rabid about putting people in jail for January 6th. And you think, have you no insight? Do you not understand what you're saying? And I've seen none of these people who've been involved for 20, 30 years in journalism. They know better. They know this. But they still can't even cross the line. And it is TDS, I guess. And the one thing that I do believe, and I know you do too, is I still think there's way more good people than bad people out there, and more people that, you know, actually do care. I just feel that January 6th, one of the worst things that came from it is people are scared to gather. And I think that there would be a really big anti-war movement right now that I would certainly be involved in. And I would go to DC like they did, you know, at Vietnam, 500,000 mm-hmm. people at Iraq. And the sad part is that those are places where we could all unite, regardless of side or race or religion or any of that. We could all unite, and people are too scared to gather. And then you have Chris Ray out there telling us that, you know, a big warning for anyone gathering in public. And it's sad, because there is places I see left and right, whether you're voting for RFK or Trump. I don't know anyone that's voting for Biden, so I can't speak for them, but they exist. But whether you're for RFK or Trump, or you don't know yet, there's a lot of things we all do agree on. And I would think right now, had January 6th not happened, a lot of us would be more in active dialogue and productively at least talking about, you know, ending the endless wars, or what's going on with the taxes, or what's going on with the and right now, I think they've really done the job of making people too afraid to do that.
From our farms to your family, all organic protein, fruits, vegetables, gut health, immune support, and so much more. We have products for weight loss and collagen and muscle building, products for children, athletic performance, and 30-day programs for just $12 a day. You can save $50 on your first purchase of $75 or more with the code MelKWellness. Go to the MelKShow.com partners page and check out MelK Superfoods today.
Well, they've made a lot of people too afraid. I mean, we hear people all the time now when there is a rally or an event called, they will. I mean, we're talking about conservative talk show hosts. I wouldn't go. Right. I would be careful. You know, remember January 6th. Remember right. What happened there. Or if you do go, be sure you behave yourself completely. And if you see any signs of trouble, get the heck out of Dodge as quickly as possible. So they're throwing a wet blanket over the First Amendment and over our right to bring redress of our grievances to government, whether it's state, local, or federal. This is happening all the time now. Yeah. Americans as a whole, Americans on the right, if they have a right, more right-leaning perspective, more conservative perspective, more libertarian perspective, they're afraid to attend protest events right now. But the other thing too is there's an unbelievably intense and large faction of not only Congress members, but also of the right-wing press who won't touch January 6th because they recognize the black eye that it was to their movement and to their team and to their side, and they want nothing to do with it. They just want it to fade off into the history books, fade off, get as far away from it as possible. And what they do not understand, and it's why when I met with Jim Jordan the first time, it's why I met with Mike Johnson the first time, now Speaker Johnson, he wasn't then, that I told each one of them, I said, with all due respect, sirs, you don't understand. Yeah. What's happening related to January 6th right now is not only happening now, but setting long-term consequences for this country, primarily against the First Amendment, several of the other amendments as well. But right. Primarily, this is an attack from the inside against our speech, and it's happening in every single one of these almost 1,400 cases so far.
Yeah. And that's really where we have to focus, is why. And again, we also have the surveillance state that these people look like they're all going to vote for warrantless surveillance on April 19th. Like, why would they do that? Why are they okay with not acknowledging the what's going on with January 6th, with the abuse of people, with taking people's lives, livelihoods, putting them on a domestic terror list for misdemeanors? So, I mean, the big, that's why I look at the entire blob in DC and I think, God, I think it's captured by this public-private partnership functioning above our government. But the answer is us, we the people. And I look forward, like I said, and you said, other people have said it too. The minute I saw that they arrested you, I tweeted, I said, oh, they have picked the wrong journalist to go. To go after. Steve Baker is not on a team. He's really on the truth, transparency, and justice for all squad. So I'm so sorry this happened to you, but I also believe that, you know, God put you in this place for a reason. And the one good thing that'll come out of this is that people actually know the truth from the inside, from a person who lived it. And I'm sorry. I thoroughly hope that it works out well. I wish more evidence would come out before then. I guess some of the Supreme Court stuff might help. But in any case, just like Peter Navarro, you know, certain people are picked to do things in their lives they didn't want. But he, too, will come out of this and be stronger and make a big difference, as you are and will. So please tell my audience how to follow you, where to find you. You're doing great work. I know you have a whole expose coming out about the Capitol Police. That's very important. Whatever is going on in the vassal state of District of Columbia, it is not kosher. And the American people do not know what is going on there. So tell everyone where to find you.
Yeah, the first thing and the best place to follow all of my stories, especially these investigative reports, is on The Blaze. And they've actually set up my own URL there. So it's theblaze.com/truth. Theblaze.com/truth. And all of my stories can be followed there. Obviously, I'm on X and other social media, and I have a single uniform handle there. So it's @TPC. The number 4 USA, TPC 4 USA. And then the third and best place, or additionally best place, is my locals community, because I have a private kind of group. It's a subscriber group that I tell more insider behind the scenes happenings, either with my case and with other things that are taking place as well. And you can reach that by, again, TPC4USA.com, TPC4USA.com. And you can subscribe to me there.
Great. Thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate you taking the time. God bless you. You're one of my favorite people. I pray for you. I know it's going to work out. I think you're in this position for a reason bigger than you would know, or we could possibly know. And thank you for being so brave and honest and not giving up. And I know you won't. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mel.
Thank you.
We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now. Did you know that there are more than 60,000 known chemicals in tap water, and the EPA only tests for 91 of them? This is why we're so grateful that we partnered with Healthy Hydration. They offer whole home water filtration, shower filters, under-the-counter pre-filters, molecular hydrogen water machines, hydrogen water bottles, and so much more for a healthier home and family. So go to themelkshow.com and click on our partners page and check out Healthy Hydration and everything they have in store for your health and wellness today.